This is the first time that we've ever done this, what we're doing this weekend. We've never had this kind of a perfecting conference before with the junior hires. We haven't even had this with the high schoolers. And we really consider that this is a continuation of the sixth grade conference that we had last May. How many of you were at the sixth grade conference and got baptized after that? Yes. Okay, so this weekend will be very similar to what we had there. But I need everyone to be quiet, okay? So don't talk so that we can get through this quickly. I need to tell you about what we're doing. What we're doing is very similar to a summer school of the truth, where we have a special schedule, even a special kind of dress code, and a special atmosphere that we're trying to maintain. So I hope you all got the information about that. The sisters, I think, need to wear a skirt or a dress or something. And the brothers are supposed to wear a shirt with a collar, I think. Is that right? So we should be dressed properly for this time. You know, the way we dress kind of illustrates our respect for what we're doing. If you have a lot of respect for what you're going to do, then you dress in that way. You know, if we're going to see the President of the United States or some top leader, you would not dress in a sloppy way, but you would dress in a very formal way. So we hope this whole weekend we could be pretty serious and give our attention to the brothers who are speaking and that we could learn something. We intended to call this a training at first, and our real intention is that we could have a kind of training, but we're also worried that by having a training for junior hires, it might be a little difficult. So we changed the name of it a little bit because we wanted to change a little bit about what we're going to do. We're not going to have a real kind of intensive training, but we are going to teach you something. You know, during the sixth grade conference, we didn't have that kind of a thought that we needed to teach you something. But we had, our attitude was that we needed to show you something. And then you could have an experience of the Lord yourself. But this time, we want to be able to teach you something. And so we need you to be kind of concentrating and attentive and to take notes and learn. Really want you to learn something. I got an email from a sister from Los Angeles. And this email really excited me. And probably I'm going to expose somebody here tonight. And I don't want to make anybody feel embarrassed. But she was with a junior high sister on the Lord's Day morning just last week, preaching the gospel on the Lord's Day morning. You know, in Los Angeles, they're going out on the campus to preach the gospel. And this junior high girl was teamed up with some of the other saints, and they were going out. And she began to talk about this weekend, the junior high girl, how she was looking forward to it, because she really, really, really wanted to learn how to preach the gospel to her friends. And she heard that what she's going to learn this weekend is how to share the gospel with her friends. And so, that's what we're going to do. We're going to make this so simple that everyone in this room can be comfortable to do this. There's a few things we want to impress you with along the way, and so I think it'll be good. Should I tell you what her name is? She's back there somewhere. Is it too embarrassing? I won't say. But I'd like to talk to you after. I'd like to talk to you. You know, I heard also another story, and this was in Cerritos. Anybody from Cerritos here? from Cerritos. Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, maybe it was you. I don't know who it was. One of the trainees, Grace, you know, her and Heidi went out there, and these girls, they wanted to go out and preach the gospel in the park. And the trainees, you know, are scared to death. You know that? Trainees are scared to death to preach the gospel. So, but the girls wanted to go, and of course the trainees can't show that they're scared because they're supposed to be trainees, you know. And so they went out. Well, first they sang some songs, and then they went out. And they were so excited and so encouraged by that. And then the girl said, was it you guys? Then the girl said, how about next week? Let's go to the mall. We could sing in the mall. So the trainees were scared of that too. Well, you know, I'm telling you all this because there is a growing feeling about among us all that really now's the time for us to learn some of these things and be comfortable with it. You know, we're God men. We belong to the Lord. And we're not ashamed of this. You know, the whole world doesn't understand what we're doing, but we do. And they may never understand what we're doing, but we still have to be who we are. Tonight, our meeting is about who we are. It's not who we should be. It's about who we are. Who are we? You know, the Bible tells us a number of things. So tonight, before I start going through the outline, and our schedule is that we'll be done about 9 o'clock or so. Snack is at 9:15. There's a schedule in the back if you ever wonder what we should be doing. And if I go too long, I apologize ahead of time. I try not to. But tonight, I think it's very important that we have a good beginning. So please pay attention and see if you could get a real strong impression. As we go through the weekend, we're going to have some practice sessions where we're going to teach you something, and then you're going to practice it right away. And when you practice, I think you'll get really encouraged, okay? We won't have any practice tonight except when you get back to your houses, we'll have a little time to pray, okay? So this is a perfecting. It's a perfecting conference. That's the Bible's term for training. We perfect people. That means, you know, if you have a coach and he's teaching you how to swing a bat to, you know, strike the ball so you get a good base hit or make good contact, and he'll tell you keep your eye on the ball, keep your elbow up, he'll say, lean into the pitch. He'll give you a lot of tips. That is perfecting. And so if you just practice the fundamentals, then you could get quite good at it. And you could even be better than your coach at some point. Okay? So tonight, we come to message number one. It's on page number five. And I hope you all turn there. Be sure to bring a pencil or a pen to the meetings. Huh? On your page three on your book. Sorry. Page three. You know, we're not going to have this time like a conference. In some ways, it's going to be like a conference. But other ways, it's not like a conference. For example, the verse memorization this time is going to be completely different. We love it. A lot of verses, and we're always for that. But you'll notice in the back of your book, there is two pages that has a lot of verses, or some verses with a line next to them. Page 40 and 41, you see that? These are what we call gospel verses. These are the ones that we want you to memorize. But we don't want you to just be able to memorize it and say it one time. We would like you to be able to say it at the end of the conference, too. So what we'd like you to do is memorize them, have the serving one initial it, but then the serving one can take your book and ask you to repeat it again on another day. And then they'll circle their initials. And if you can do that two or three times on that same verse, then you'll get two or three circles. All right? That way we can make sure, or we can help you so that when you memorize it, you'll still remember it later on. You know, a lot of the verses we memorize, we don't remember later on, right? We memorize the same verses over and over again. Eventually, we get it. But okay, so we're on page 3. Let's read the title all together of our meeting tonight. Ready, go. The Believer's Influence on the World. The Believer's Influence. Do you know that God expects that the believers would have an influence on the world around them? That the world needs good influence. And when the Lord spoke to his disciples about this, he had several names for the believers. He called them salt. He called them light. All of these kinds of expressions would indicate that these believers affect people around them. People around you need the Lord. That's the truth. People around you are in darkness. That's the truth. People around us are in corruption. They're in sinful things. They're in dark things. They need our influence. We are a good influence. I wish all the sinful people could meet you so that they could be under your influence. God is so wise. You know what he does? He puts the believers right in the middle of the world so that they can have an effect on everyone around them. You know, we're always afraid. You know, I'm a parent. I have four children. You know, I had my 8th grandchild was born just yesterday. Imagine that. I'm such a young man, and I already have 8 grandchildren. Well, you know, he just puts us in the middle of terrible school situations or in cities that are so dark. And you think, why would God do that? Maybe it'd be better if we all just moved away. We moved up to Big Bear. We could all live here forever until the Lord comes. Wouldn't that be awesome? Wouldn't have to go home. You know, we called Mom and Dad. Come on up here. We're up here now. We're not going back to that school, not going back to those friends, not going back to that situation. But God didn't do it that way because he knows that that school or that city or that place needs a good influence, needs salt, needs light. So this is the first thing that we have to be impressed with, is that we are God's influence. And of course, the danger is that rather than us being influential, influencing others, we got influenced in a bad way. And so that's why we have this perfecting conference, so that it would not be the opposite way, it would be the right way. Instead of us being influenced, we got them influenced. Okay? So let's read Roman number 1 together. Let's see what the first verse says. Let's read it together. You are the salt of the earth. Let's read the verse, Matthew 5:13. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt has become tasteless, with what shall it be salted? It is no longer good for anything except to be cast out and trampled underfoot by men. Look at that point A. It says, salt, by nature, is an element that kills and eliminates the germs of corruption. To the corrupted earth, the people of the kingdom of the heavens, that's us, are such an element, keeping the earth from being fully corrupted. Do you know when we were in Los Angeles, the church in Los Angeles, and we were downtown in a place called Eldon Hall, it was a very high crime area. And then the brothers and sisters began to move over there. We bought a meeting hall at the corner of 11th and Eldon. It's Koreatown now, for any of you that want to know. And right there, there's a lot of apartments and houses, and the saints began to move in there and moved all around there. Eventually, at one point, there was about 600 brothers and sisters living within a few blocks of Eldon Hall. And there was this drastic drop in crime. Really? It's because of the influence of the saints. Sometimes at night, you could walk down the street and you could hear singing coming out of the houses. It was really precious. Or sometimes at dinner time, you're walking down the street and the saints would have the windows open like this, and you could hear them praying at the dinner table or pray reading a verse. And so while we're right in the middle of a very harsh and terrible part of the city of Los Angeles, still it was like heaven. I mean, it was glorious. And in fact, the police knew us and knew the impact that we had there. And of course, we're quite happy that we were there. Sometimes, you know, when we'd be walking home from the meeting, this is funny, we'd be walking home from the meeting at night, two or three of us, and we'd be calling on the Lord or singing or something. And then all of a sudden, the light would come on, the helicopter spotlight. You know, they're flying overhead. You know how they do that? And then all of a sudden, boop, and all of a sudden you're just right in the middle of this bright, bright light. Of course, we thought the Lord was coming and take me, Lord, you know. But actually, it was the police, you know, wondering if we were bad guys. But actually, we weren't. We were the salt of the earth. You know, this is really true, that a believer has this kind of an effect on people around them. It was very often in my experience as a young man or even as a student that when people would curse around me, they would say, oh, sorry. They would apologize to me because they cursed in front of me. Of course, if I wasn't there, they just cursed like crazy. You know, they used all kinds of language. But once they knew I was a Christian, then they apologized. And you know what? They also stopped cursing like that. They stopped telling those jokes. You see, it had an effect. It had an influence. And the atmosphere at my job or at the school changed because the people knew who I was. They knew. I'm for the Lord. I'm for the Lord. And when they would do something or say something or begin to tell a joke and everybody leans in to hear, I didn't do that. And because I didn't do that, it made them uncomfortable to be like that. And you know what? It was not only once or twice, but many times they would come to me later because they had a problem and they wanted to know what it was that I had. You see, this is a very, very positive kind of influence. Okay, let's read on. Well, there's a lot to say about this, and I want to make a comparison. The Bible says we're the salt of the earth, and it also tells us we're the light of the world. Who knows the difference between the earth and the world? When the Bible says salt of the earth and light of the world, what's the difference, huh? What's your name?
David.
All right, David.
The earth was created by God and the world is a system created by Satan.
That's right. The earth was something beautiful created by God. But Satan, through the fall, corrupted and formed a world system. The earth needs to be preserved in its original situation so that it can exist for a long time for God to carry out his purpose. So the earth needs to be kept and preserved It needs a good environment. You see, when you have a country like America, which was founded on proper Christian principles, that becomes salt that preserves it for a long time. And it creates an environment for the Lord to do a lot through this country. But when this country gives up that kind of influence, gives up the Bible, gives up the Ten Commandments, gives up the proper influence, then it becomes very corrupted, and we're seeing that happening right now, where that preserving element, that salt, is gone. And how sad it is that there are so many thousands of Christians, and they've lost their taste. They all became like the worldly people, and so they became tasteless. And so the impact and the influence of the salt is not there anymore. So while on one hand the earth needs to be preserved and salted, the world is a dark place that needs light to shine, because Satan's system, Satan's kingdom is very dark. Okay, so point B says, for the kingdom people to become tasteless means that they lose their salting function. They become the same as the earthly people and are indistinguishable from the unbelievers. That means you can't tell them apart. Come here. Can I get you two guys to come up here? What's your name? Peter. And your name? Caleb. Okay, come here. These two guys, yeah, stand here face. Look at this great audience. Look at them. Isn't this beautiful? Okay. This is salt right here. You're looking at two chunks of salt, all right? And they're like identical twins, aren't they? You just can't hardly tell them apart. One's Caleb, the other one's what? Peter. Peter and Caleb. They're like twins. They're like the same. But you know, if we get another guy here, this guy's really worldly. And he's like worldly. And he comes along, and then Caleb becomes like, what's your name? Sam. Becomes like Sam. Then he became tasteless. And so that he's lost his salting function. And instead of having a positive influence on Sam, you were leading the singing a minute ago, right? Was the other guy named Sam too? So it's like 1 and 2 Samuel? Yeah. Okay. So instead of Sam being influenced by Caleb, Caleb got influenced by Sam. And they lost his salting function. So now he's alone. That's hard, huh? All right, thank you, brothers. Thanks, Peter. Okay. So we all have to keep our salting function. All right, so we do not want to become the same. Oh, I hope you could all be so impressed. We are not the same. How about let's all say that? We are not the same. The same as what? Same as the worldly people. We are God-men. We have the divine life, the divine nature, and that's why we are salt. Okay, Romans 2. Let's read Romans 2 all together. You are the light
of the world.
Sisters, read it.
You are the light of the world.
Okay, let's have the brothers read the verse, Matthew 5:14.
You are the light of the world. It is impossible for a city situated upon a mountain to be hidden.
How about sisters read the next verse, 15. Nor do men light a lamp
and place it under the bushel, but on the lampstand, and it shines to all who are in the house.
And brothers, the next verse, 16. In the same way, let your light shine before men, so that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in the heavens. Isn't that good? Look at this. It says, you are the light of the world. It is impossible for a city situated upon a mountain to be hidden. You know, this is really true. When you have a city on a hill and all the lights are on, you can see it for miles and miles, right? Because it's elevated. It's built up and it's bright. Even in the darkest night, it stands out as a beacon of hope and light, okay? That is what we are. We are the light of the world. Okay, Peter and Caleb, can you come back here again? Sorry, you guys are too close for comfort here. Sorry. You see, it doesn't say, now listen carefully. The Bible verse does not say you are the lights of the world. Lights, plural. Like he's a light and he's a light. It doesn't mean that. You have to understand something. It means you are the light. And it talks about a city. So that means corporately, we are a city of light. Now this city of light ultimately becomes, well, it becomes the church, the kingdom, and eventually it becomes the New Jerusalem. But right now for us, what this means is not to emphasize that individually, Caleb is a light, Peter is a light, Juan Carlos is a light, Sam, 1 Samuel is a light, Isaac is a light, 2 Samuel is a light, Bill's a light. All of us are lights. We're all just these individual little lights running around. No, it doesn't mean that. It means that we need each other, that we're part of the church of God. And because we're being built together, we are becoming a city that's on a hill. And now we really shine. Even when I go to school by myself, or I go to my job, or I go here to the store and I'm alone, I'm still built with my brothers. And they're going with me in spirit. So wherever you are, even if you're in a school all by yourself, you are part of this city that is situated on a hill. Amen. You go, maybe it looks like you're going by yourself, but you're not going by yourself. You're going with me, and I'm going with you. And together, we go as a city. Isn't that good? Amen. Thank you. All right. I'll need you again later, I think. All right. So this should impress us that we are not alone. This is another characteristic that we have to be impressed with, young people. Even though many times we feel like we're very alone, we're not alone. We are built up. You see these four brothers? Why don't you four brothers stand up? You guys are like a wall right there. What's your name? Yeah. Huh? Stephen.
Carlos.
Say it with a little excitement there, Carlos.
Carlos.
Anthony. Brandon. You see these guys? Look at them. They're like a wall right there. They're like a city situated on a hill. Do you guys all go to the same school?
No.
No, you don't. But you know, you're brothers, right? You're all brothers in the Lord. So when any one of you goes to school, even by yourself, in spirit, you're taking the others with you, right? You're not alone. They're with you, right? That's right. Okay, thank you. Where are you guys? You guys from Anaheim?
Yeah.
All right. Very good. Anaheim, there's a lot here from Anaheim. And you know what? You know what else is really good about this? About being a city? It also says that we're a lampstand. We're a lamp on a lampstand. And you know what that means? That's a type of the church. That's a picture of the church. But you know what that means? That means that we not only shine on people outwardly, in other words, other people see us as different from them because we're bright, we're shining. When everyone else is lying, we don't lie. When other people will steal, we wouldn't steal. When other people might cheat on a test or something, we wouldn't do that. That is a light. That is a light shining. The reason we can do that, or we could be like that, is because we got the brothers, right? Or we got the sisters. And we're standing together. But not only do we have this kind of an outward influence on people, we also have an inward influence on people. That's what that means. It shines in the house. It means it affects people inwardly. It causes their conscience to be sensitive. That's why when they swear in front of you, they say, oh, sorry, sorry. Because what? There's a light shining inside of them. You know, one time I was working at a job, and at this job, I had to go away for special training, And I was in a city far away for 3 weeks. Actually, I was in Lexington, Kentucky. There was no church there, no saints there. I was in a Howard Johnson's motel for 3 weeks while I was going to the IBM plant there for some training. And they, IBM arranged all the housing, so I had a roommate in my room that was this unbeliever, terrible guy. I mean, you know, normal, terrible guy. So I'm here, I'm in this motel room, and you know, they all go down to the bar at night and are drinking and telling jokes and meeting the local women that were coming there, and it was kind of a real hot spot. Of course, I couldn't go there. I mean, I couldn't hang out with them, and I wasn't going to drink with them. There was no way I was going to do that. And so I just stayed in my room. I just stayed in my room for 3 weeks. I mean, there was nowhere to go. I didn't have a ride anywhere. I didn't have a car. I just kind of locked myself up in my room. This guy would come and go, and he'd come back, and he would be affected by what was going on. And turns out, about 3 years later, I got transferred to the Fresno office of IBM, and specifically to the Visalia sub-office, and that roommate was my coworker. He was working with me in that office, the same guy. My goodness, had I just been like everyone else, I would have lost that influence. But because I didn't know that 2 years from now I'm going to be working side by side with this man. But there I was working with him. And then, you know, one day his marriage is falling apart and he's really upset. He calls me up and he wants to know if he could come over to my house because he wanted to talk to me. See, I realized that by maintaining a testimony of who I am. I didn't preach to him. I didn't say anything to him. I just lived in front of him a life of salt. Then when he had a problem, he called me. He came over. I was able to share with him the gospel. He did not pray at that time. I don't know if he ever did. I don't know where he is now. I quit working there, and so did he. So I don't know where we are. But anyway, the point is this, is that we can have such an influence on people around us by the way we live. We become a light, and it affects them inwardly, not just their behavior outwardly. It gets into them. They begin to think, you know, Peter, what do you have that I don't have? Why are you peaceful when everything else is terrible? You seem to be happy. You seem to be okay. How do you do that? Are you just a happy person? How is it that you can be the way you are? Because that affects them. It affects them. They see it, and they want it. They want to be like that. You know, sometimes we look at ourselves and we think, well, you know, I'm nobody. I can't say anything. I don't have any boldness. I don't have anything to say. But, you know, you don't realize that those people around you are wondering, how are you like the way you are? I wish I was like that. They may want to know, how do you do that? You may want to meet your parents. They may want to know. And you may say, well, then you may not have anything to say. Well, you know, I don't know. You could just say something like this, it's the Lord. It's the Lord. Then they go, oh, it's the Lord. That gets into them. And then that becomes a light in them. And then they come back and say, I want the Lord too. And then, oh, what am I going to do? Now what am I going to do? Too many times we heard stories like this where people says, I want what you have. I want what you have. I know you have something. You maybe never told me what you have, but I want it. Okay, so let's keep reading. In verse 16, it says, let your light shine before men. That means that when you're in class or where you're with your friends, that's the time for the light to be switched on. That's the time. You have to do it in front of people. We're not putting on a show or a performance, but we're letting our light shine before people, before men, so that they could see our good works. Do you know, when it talks about the salt, it's talking about our nature. When it talks about light, it's talking about our behavior. These two words are really good. Salt is our nature, but light is our behavior. Okay? Let's read these points. A, light is the shining of a lamp to enlighten those in darkness. To the darkened world, the people of the kingdom of the heavens are such a light, effacing the world's darkness. In nature, there's the point, they are the healing salt. And in behavior, they are the shining light. The believers are like luminaries that reflect the light of the sun. As luminaries, the believers shine in the world. The believers do not possess any light in themselves. You need to notice this. But they have a heavenly ability to reflect the light of Christ. Did you see the moon tonight? Did you see it? It's like this big old thing. It's round, full moon in the sky. Do you know that the moon has no ability to light, has no light in itself? You know that, right? The light does not come from the moon. The light comes from the sun and is reflected off the moon. You learned that in about, what, second grade science? Right? Or maybe junior high. I don't know. Maybe you didn't got it. You know, I heard a brother talking about the moon one time. This is awesome talk. He was telling us that the moon is this black, black rock. It is the darkest stone. It's not dirt. It's not light. You know, when the astronauts landed on the moon and they brought back moon samples, it surprised everybody. You know, because the thought is, the conventional thought by that time of the scientists is this Big Bang theory, you know, that there was some explosion, you know, a trillion, gazillion years ago or some idiotic number. And everything is moving, you know, together. And so that the moon and the earth kind of came from the same source and then they just kind of landed out here and they're just kind of hovering. So they assumed that the moon was made up of the same materials that the earth was, right? I mean, because they're so close. But when the astronauts came back, and they came back with what the moon was made out of, it was completely different composition. Where the earth, you know, you look at the earth from space, it's blue and green, it's beautiful. But the moon is like this black stone in the middle of the sky. Because God knew that if he made it light or white or shiny, when the sun hit it, it would kill us. It would be too bright. So it's this ore grade, I forget, what is it made out of? Ore grade something. But it's a rare, it's not that common on the earth. Anyway, just to show that God put it there. It wasn't part of an explosion. God said, look at the moon, earth, amen. That's what I do. He spoke and it was done. Anyway, forget about the moon. The moon, though, does not have any light of itself. It can only reflect. And that's what we are. We are luminaries. When it says that we're the light of the world, it means that we're a luminary, that we don't have any light in ourselves, but we can reflect the light of the sun, which is God, which is Christ. So let's read this verse, Philippians 2:15. Okay? All right? Let's read this one all together. That you may be blameless and guileless,
children of God, without blemish, in the midst of a crooked and perverted generation.
among whom you shine as luminaries in the world.
That you may be blameless and guileless. This is inwardly and outwardly. Children of God without blemish. I want you to underline these words. In the midst. That you are children of God. Where are you? You're in the midst of a crooked and perverted generation. You see that? Then the next two words, among whom you shine as luminaries. Where? In the world. So you need to underline in the midst, among whom, and in the world. All right, now I'd like to do an illustration. We did this, right, Joseph, in Poland. How about we get you 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 brothers to come here. Stand right here in a big clump. Okay? Now you guys are all just like worldly guys. You're all like sinful worldly guys. Sorry about that. Stand in a circle. Face each other. Just get, you know, you're like, yeah, you guys are like bad. You're bad to the bone. Okay. Now we need somebody to stand in the midst. Bill, come here. I need you to get in the midst. Okay. Bill, he's a God man. You see that? Now he's in the midst. You see? And he's among whom? And he's in the world. Now, these guys are all facing this way. Face that way, okay? Not you, Bill. Everyone else. Yeah, turn around. There you go. That's like hell down there. And so they're all like heading in this direction. Away from God, in Satan's control, into the world. And they're under that kind of influence. Bill, on the other hand, is a gospel seed. He is the light of the world. He's a luminary. He's going another way. He's different from them, but he happens to be in the midst of them. He happens to be among them. And he's in the world. See, God's wisdom was not to take them out of the world, but to leave them there so that they could have an influence on the ones around them. Isn't that good? Are you being influenced yet? No, you're not. Are you? You going to turn around? No, not yet. Okay, we'll wait till tomorrow. We'll turn you around. Okay, thank you. Good to know. All right, you see, this is what it means to be in the midst, among whom, and in the world, right? Wouldn't it be so much easier if the Lord took us out of the world, took us out of all the influences? It would just be so much easier. Right, Sam? Okay, I better get back. Okay, let's go on. I got only a few more minutes. So, number 3, Romans 3. You are seeds of the gospel. Seeds of the gospel. Let's have all the brothers read Matthew 13:3. And he spoke the sower went out to sow. What does the sower sow? He sows seeds. That's what he does. He sows seeds. Then John 17:15. How about let's have all the brothers. Did the brothers just read? Yeah. Let's have all the sisters read John 17:15. Okay, go. I do not. You see, his prayer is not to get us out of the world. But he does have a prayer to keep us out of the hand or the influence of the evil one, because the evil one wants to destroy us, but he wants us there. Isn't that good? All right, so then the next verse, let's read John 12:24 together. Truly, truly, so what the Lord said was, first of all, that he was the sower scattering seeds. And this is what a sower does. He reaches into his pouch, his bag, he takes the seeds, and he throws them. He scatters them. And they're scattered according to the will and pleasure of the sower. And he has taken you, you are seeds, your seeds of life, and he's taking you and he's scattering you. Some are in this city, some are there, some are in Anaheim, some are in Irvine, in Huntington Beach, in Fullerton, all over. And they get scattered like seeds. And you know, his expectation is that these seeds would fall into the ground and die and bear fruit. That out of that one seed, which is you, come here, you're a gospel seed now. All right, you're a seed. Let me tell you about a seed. A seed is a container of life. It's a little tiny container of life. You never, whoever saw a big seed, like you got to carry one on your back and then you dig this hole and drop it in, you know? No, seeds are always little. Even, you know, these giant sequoia trees, the seed is just really little. Well, my brother, he's a gospel seed. You don't have to be big. You don't have to be great. It's what you are. What are you? You're a container of life. You have God's life in you. The Lord is tossing you. Where do you go to school? Van Nuys Middle School. That's in the valley, isn't it?
Yeah.
You sure? Okay, so you're going to be scattered like a... See, the sower, which is God himself, you didn't know this, but in his wisdom, he said, I want this guy, this brother right here, I want him to be sown into Van Nuys Middle School because there is people there. There's little middle schoolers, junior highers, that need his, what he has. They need him. He might be as, how do I say this? Being close to him might be as close to God as these kids will ever be in their whole life. There might be one encounter with him, and that will be their one time where they encounter God. Because why? He's a seed. He's a container of God's life. And the sower, in his wisdom, is scattering him to that place. How about that? What's your name?
Juan.
Wonderful Juan. And all of us, look at that. We have, you know, so many of us, maybe 150 or 140 of us, and we're, you know, it's like we're all like these, what do you call it, special forces guys. And we're getting dropped in behind enemy lines, you know, we got the gear on, we're going in, you know, we're going in. And what are we going to do? We're going to fall into the ground there, and we're going to be a seed of life. And the Lord then, you know what he's going to do? He's going to start putting people in your path. He's going to bring people into your realm, sitting by you in your class, because he's concerned for them and he wants to save them. And so this guy sitting next to you in class may be somebody that the Lord wants to save. And he puts him next to you so that you'll start praying for him. And then you know what he's going to do? He's going to answer your prayer by saying, what's up with you? What do you got? See, it's like that. Okay? That's what a gospel seed is. A little container of life. And you know what? You know it says a seed falls into the ground and dies. Don't be afraid about this expression. This is what the Lord did. He fell into the ground and died, and boom, out came us. We're the many grains. And so because we're the many grains, what are we going to do? We're going to do the same thing he did. Wherever we are, we're going to fall in the ground. You know, tomorrow or the next day, we're going to have a message called witnessing. You know, the Lord, one of the things that the Lord told us that we are is we are his witnesses. And that means that we have a personal experience and we have to testify about it. We have to say something. But this word witnesses also means martyrs. That means you die when you speak. You speak. You know, anyone that speaks for the Lord dies. You know, something dies. Maybe it's your face. Maybe it's your reputation. Maybe it's your image. But anyway, that's what falling in the ground and dying does. Okay, let's keep going. Boy, I like this. Okay, look at A. A seed is a small container of life and is able, look at that, to reproduce itself. You know, if you took a seed, first of all, if you took a little pebble the same size as a seed, and you dug in the ground and you put that little pebble in there, what is this? This looks like, something off of something. Okay, pretend this is a seed. Oh, pretend this is a pebble, okay? This is like a little rock. You dig a hole in the ground, you put the rock in there, you bury it, you water it. What happens? Nothing. It's a rock. But if you take a seed and you dig a hole, put it in there, dig it up, put water on it, then what happens? It grows. Why? Because it's a container of life. But if we take this seed, you see the mantle over there? See this mantle? You know, some homes, you put things on the mantle because you want to show it off, or you want to make a display. You know, like it's like special things go on the mantle. So let's say, come here, what's your name?
Brian.
Come here, Brian. Suppose Brian is this great specimen of a brother. He is like the ultimate brother. And so we just want to put him on the mantle to show him off. Will that seed grow? Will it bear fruit? So, you know, we're not here for a show. We're not here to impress anyone. Thank you. We're here to be sowed, to be sown, and to grow, and we have the ability to reproduce itself. Number two, or B, it says a seed is scattered according to the wisdom and desire of the sower. Don't say, well, I'm the only one at my school. I don't have any companions. No, you have a whole army full of companions. And you're the only one in your school because that was the wisdom and desire of the sower. He wants you to reproduce yourself and grow your own companions there. C, a seed is able to bring forth what? Much fruit. Okay? So the last thing we are, we'll be done here in just a few minutes, is we are a branch in the vine. Let's read Romans 4 together. You are the branches. And let's have the brothers read John 15:5. He bears much fruit. John 15:16, sisters,
you did not choose me, but I chose you, and I sent you that you should go forth and bear fruit, and that your fruit should remain, that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give you.
You know, this verse, these two verses are quite good. Let's keep reading, though. Let's read point A. All together, we were like
branches,
and through faith,
we have been grafted into Christ. Here the Lord said that he set us.
Together, B.
Your asking the Lord's name requires us to abide in the Lord, and allow him and his word to abide in us. This kind of
you know, when it says here in John 15:5, I am the vine, you are the branches, He who abides in me and I in him, he bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. I would just like to say something here tonight to all the junior hires and even high schoolers, that this is not a training for you to do something for the Lord. I hope you could be impressed and understand what I'm saying. We are not here to try to get you to do something. Rather, we're trying to impress you with who you are. This perfecting or this training is not going to be to lay some obligation upon you, but rather to impress you that we can't do much. And especially without the Lord, we can do nothing. So we have to see. See what? That the Lord is this vine. He's this tree. And when we believed into him, we were grafted into him. And now the life of this vine, the root and fatness of this tree, is now flowing in me and flowing in you. I have the same life, the same living as the vine. In fact, you don't say, oh, that's not the vine, that's the branch. You don't say that. You just say, that's the vine. Because the vine and the branch became one. This is who we are. We're not trying to get into the Lord. We're not trying to feel it. We are in the Lord. We don't need to feel it. And because we're joined to him, fruit bearing is automatic. And then it just says, for whatever you ask the Father, he will give it. So then it tells us that the branches should at least ask. Ask the Father. Ask for your friends. This asking is related to our unbelieving friends. Okay? So that is, maybe that's good for tonight. So we'll stop here.